Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. I'm Cliff.
Hello, I'm Brett.
How are you doing, Brett? Under the weather?
Yes. You know what? I was under the weather, but I fully recovered, gladly. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a sickness bug.
Poorly nice. Tummy, was it?
Yes, poorly tum-tums.
Was it? Is that what it was?
Right. Yeah. You know what, Cliff? It was the shits.
I thought you just had a tickly cough.
No.
I was right. I told you to keep your fluids up when it was the correct advice.
It's always good advice, that though, isn't it? I mean, you've just gone for the main advice whenever anybody's
fluids up.
And have you had Lucas Aid?
Uh-huh, in a wrapper. Ceremonial wrapper. Yeah.
Ceremonial wrapper. Yeah, and did you win any competitions on? There's always competitions on Lucas Aid, isn't there? On the side of the bottle.
There used to be. Uh-huh. I don't know if there's still. Can you still get the big bottles?
I think there is. You can't get the glass bottles because that's what I remember as a kid. The glass bottles. Can you remember them?
Just in hospital. Grapes and Lucas Aid.
Grapes and Lucas Aid.
Anyway.
Anyway,
you're fighting fit. That's all right. You watched the Oppenheimer. I know that's what we're talking about last time.
I did. I enjoyed the Oppenheimer. But there's one thing. I mean, have you seen it, Cliff?
No.
No.
I will see it, but it's a big investment in time and brain energy.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested in the story and stuff like that.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
You know, I like World War II documentaries
you love
and all
the,
that
you
kind
love
of stuff.
War, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I generally love the wars. But there's one thing about the Oppenheimer film, which I realised, Cliff, whilst watching it, that one of the scenes, right, has been completely lifted off the smell of Reeves and Mortimer, right? Completely. Now, can you remember the smell of Reeves and Mortimer where you can remember Barry White, where he's trying to get off
Mr.
with a
Huff and
bite.
Puff, yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. And Bob is sitting across from him. I think he's got underpants on, but he looks naked, and he's got his legs crossed, and he's smoking a fag.
Oh, I've seen this picture of Cillian Murphy.
Have you? Well, that's it.
I was
going to send
it
to you. Well, that's where it is. I mean, it's just completely lifted from the smell of Reeves and Mortimer.
Mr. Huff and Puff.
Completely. And I'm not in a huff, and I'm not a puff. So yes, I'll send the picture to you just so you can confirm that it is exactly the same thing.
Sweet love to you.
Do you want us to rub some Savlon on for you?
Well, I went to the pictures. I've been to the pictures twice in the last 2 weeks, and neither of the times to see Barbie or the Oppenheimer.
Right. So, okay, you're going against the grain, are you, Cliff?
Well, Barbie's not out here yet. Comes out next week, I think. So I haven't had a chance to see that yet.
Is it being thoroughly vetted by the authorities?
I think it was being thoroughly vetted. And is one of the actors or characters transgender?
I don't know. But probably, because it's a modern film, isn't it, Cliff?
And of course, I assumed all of the characters were transgender, what with the lack of genitals. So,
well, that's it, exactly.
The censors here have been like, we can't have this.
I know that they haven't got any genitals.
The only time
they
wanted to see genitals in a film. So no, I went to see Indiana Jones. Have you seen it?
All right. I haven't seen it, but I haven't heard good things.
I think it's just been totally overshadowed initially by Mission Impossible, and then Mission Impossible is totally overshadowed by the other two on it. So I think it's fourth on that list of blockbusters that came out within a short spell. It's it's absolutely ludicrous. Like, totally, totally ludicrous.
Totally ludicrous.
Well, the first... You know what I'm sick of, Brett? I'm sick of sequels to films where what they do is they repeat something that's happened in an earlier film from years ago. So nerds go, it's just like the first one, that, isn't it, from 1985?
Yeah, there's no...
You know what I mean? Like, Star Wars.
I think the AI has gotten involved, doesn't it?
The AI is part of this. That's a separate point. But, like, the first 20
years
of this film...
I mean, by the writing, though, that's what I mean. Actually writing the films. Right.
Maybe,
I think it has.
But you know what I mean? Like, Star Wars did it, where that guy just went, well, I'll just make the first one of that new trilogy.
Yeah, well, The Force Awakens was just like Star Wars, wasn't it?
And I was like, it's amazing. It just harkened back to that initial thing, that reason everybody loved it, and that story. He's kind of just mirrored it with these new characters. I'm like, no, but that's the same film. even that one that everybody hates, at least it was different.
it's creativity, isn't it? That's being... I mean, there's obviously still creative people who write music and who, you know, write films and stuff like that. But are they being allowed to be creative?
No, it's just not what people want, right? Like this, I think the first 20 minutes of this is Indiana Jones fighting Nazis running across the top of a train. I'm like, what?
Right,
tick, Nazis, tick. Fucking, he goes back and collects his fucking whip, tick. He's on top of a train, that, tick. Like, all right, I get it. You know what people like from the first one. It's good on you. But, you know, can you just make a new film that's any good? Maybe not.
Well, that's it. There's no creativity, is there?
So anyway, so that first bit, it's all that they've made their faces young through the CGI.
For the AI, yes.
And I mean, it was about 10 minutes into it, and I was thinking, fuck me, this is awful. Like, it's so badly done. And there's a clip, like a long shot of him running across the top of the train. And it's like a computer game from like 15 years ago. It doesn't look... it's not even as good as loads of the shit you would get now in like in-game, like movie sequences and stuff.
What, the CGI, I was thinking, you mean?
Like, yeah, because that's all CGI. Like, it's a CGI Indiana Jones running on the top of a CGI train. Like, it's just graphics. So, and it's bad. And then I realized, well, hang on, this is Lucasfilm and Disney. It's not like... it's like the richest...
They're supposed to be the pioneers of that kind of stuff.
I thought it was really disappointing from that point of view. Toby Jones is good in it, but he's only in that first bit. He's got his own face. And then it fast forwards to like, and Mads Mikkelsen's in that as well. You know, I'm a big Mads Mikkelsen fan. This character, he's just like Nazi, just everything you would make a Nazi
sinister baddie
to be. Kind of, yeah. And then the Fleabag turns up, and obviously it turns fucking shit.
The Fleabag. Fleabag. I watched The Flash.
Yeah.
Have Guess you seen what? That?
She's not funny in this either.
It's enough. I'm seeing the Fleabag, so I don't know. But The Flash I watched, which is of the same ilk, isn't it? It's got loads of cameos in and stuff like that.
It's like a
throwback in the past. But the CGI is just weird. Weird.
It's like there's loads babies. Of Batmans in it, isn't it?
There's Nick Cage is in it as Superman. You know, like the like
oh, because he was going to be that, yeah.
Aye. So it's got like all, which are, that's all right, you know. But the CGI, the stuff, it's just, I don't know, it just takes you out. It is like playing a computer game, and you don't want that. You want realism, which is another reason to like Christopher Nolan films, because he hates CGI as well.
Even
in this Oppenheimer film, there's no CGI in it whatsoever, and they're setting off an atomic bomb, which is... wonderful achievement, I think. Another reason to watch it.
Probably the first person to say that.
Very wonderful achievement. That's what I like. That I like watching a film, and it looks like a film, not that it looks like a computer game.
No, I agree. I'm with you on that. What are you drinking anyway,
Brad? Although, Cliff, I would like someone to CGI my face.
Okay.
Would you like to have a shot?
Well,
a younger me. younger me. I wouldn't want to be.
I'll give it
else.
A go. I'll see if I can get some AI thing. We've got one at work. I'll see if I can run your face through it.
You've got CGI at work. You've got AI taking
stuff.
Over the world.
Oh, yeah,
this
stuff.
Magazine.
What do you mean?
That's what you're doing, aren't you? You're taking over the world. Like China, where you've got to have citizens' credits and all that kind of stuff.
There's something about you can pay stuff with your hand now in China.
There's something where you go to a vending machine, and unless you're smiling, it won't give you it. You've got to like seem happy
mm-hmm.
right, at good. The vending machine. Mm-hmm. That's what, not what's good.
The, what they're selling, though?
Well, like chocolates and sweets and that. But if you're not smiling, yeah, it doesn't give you it.
I'm about to get a double decker. Fucking get in.
Exactly. Well, but you know, if you're in a bad mood or whatever, you're allowed to be in a bad mood, aren't you? We're going to talk about a sitcom called Duty Free.
Yes.
Which we all watched as kids and probably forgot about until we watched a live version of the Vic Reeves Big Night Out, which was recorded in Newcastle, I think.
Yes, I heard.
And Bob
Mortimer. The video,
Yeah, and Bob Mortimer is looking through a crack in the stage, isn't he? And he kind of sees a Duty Free episode through the crack of the stage, which is wonderful. So we always used to talk about it for that very reason.
What does he say?
He says, apparently trapped in the Costa del Sol or whatever, doesn't he?
He says it's
Keith Barron.
He says it's hapless Keith Barron. And I think Vic says, is he still trapped in the Costa del Sol? And to be honest, I remember this being on as a kid, and I remember it being popular or like fairly big. It was always on our telly. I think we watched it. I can't remember whether we've only watched the first episode. And I don't really know whether the plot is eventually that they can't get out of the Costa del Sol or not.
Well, yeah, it's very odd because, I mean, obviously, you know, Bob Mortimer's a very clever man. And it is, if you sort of watch all the episodes, which obviously it happened, but I've read about them, watch the first one. I think the first two series of this, they were just in that hotel.
Okay,
just
but
there.
Are they trapped? Are they just like... Is it just,
so it almost seems
just spans
like
them
they're
on
trapped.
Holiday.
So it almost seems like they're trapped. So because it was like for two series, the running joke was, it's the longest holiday in the history of the world or
okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously Bob's a very clever man, isn't he? And he's made that into a joke, isn't he?
And also, do you think that... that's the source of Paul and Tony Barron's surname on the club.
It could well be. Later. I didn't think of that.
I thought of that when I was watching it today. Really?
Yeah, I think that's quite possible, isn't it? Do you want your synopsis of Duty Free, Cliff?
I always look forward to them, but today I'm absolutely desperate to hear this synopsis.
Well, I'm putting any racism in. So, Duty Free is a British sitcom written by Eric Chappell and Gene War.
Okay.
I love the war. Hapless Keith Barron. I had to put that in, didn't I? I had to put Hapless Keith Barron in. Attempts to engage in an affair with the affluent and exotic Linda during a 2-week holiday to Spain with his wife.
She's okay. Keep going. Sorry.
That's it.
Oh, that's it.
All right, you can go.
I mean, the reason she's exotic is that she's just a bit posher than he is. Is that it?
The reason she's exotic is because in the titles, a music slightly changes into an exotic type of music.
Yeah.
During the titles. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the reason. I mean, she's all right, isn't she?
Think she's better than his wife?
I mean, I wouldn't like to say.
I think his wife's the best character, actually. I think she's good.
I do as well. I think she's got the best lines in this episode.
She's got the best lines, certainly in this episode. I think Robert is actually the best, but he's
the racist man.
But he's horrible, so can't say that, really. So it's about this couple, Keith Barron, who plays David Pierce, and his wife, Amy, played by Gwen Taylor. Do you know anything else Keith Barron was in, really?
I'm sure he's in a Hammer film.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Or an Amicus one. He's in The Land That Time Forgot. Right? I don't know if you remember that film. And he's also in one with Peter Cushing called Nothing But the Night.
So is this all before, well before this?
Well before this. Well before this.
He's got
this.
A lot of, fuck me, he's on IMDb, he's been going since 1961. This is 1984. He's in the Avengers for an episode.
Yeah.
So he's a bit of a jobbing act there in the 60s. Little appearances here and there. Just one episode.
I mean, he would have been right in there in the 60s, wouldn't he, Keith Barrett? Wouldn't he? He would have been.
I would imagine he was a proper lad about town, yeah.
Ah, definitely. Bloke from Leeds or wherever he's from. Of course he was, man.
And then in the 70s, he ends up in a few more shows. Land That Time Forgot, like you say. What else is he in here? He's in some Zed Cars.
You would have saw him as like, you know, if you're watching British TV.
He's the storyteller in Jack and Ori. He told the story in 43 episodes of Jack and Ori.
Did he really?
From the 60s and 70s.
I thought that was just like they had people... Random people turn up to do that kind of stuff.
I think that's now. That's now, I think.
Is it?
So then all the 67, that's his main thing. He's in Doctor Who in 1983.
Yes, he's in Whoever's Doctor Who. Whoever's in
that. I don't know who that one is. Then he's in a show called Leaving from 1984 to 1985. What's that? A middle class couple decide to get divorced. Well, that sounds like a brilliant sitcom. And he looks
it's
like
it's very class based, isn't it? The 80s and sitcoms, it's very class based, and this is no different, is it?
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk it's all about his character a little bit, I'm sure, because it's in there. It's like a classic trope, isn't it? He's a special guest on Noel's House Party in 1995. imagine he's coming to the door, it's Keith Barron. Like, what? So, who?
We would have loved that, wouldn't we?
We would have loved it.
We would have loved that fact.
And he's been loads of stuff since then. So like proper telly good stuff. Like, well, not good stuff, but Peak Practice, Hetty Winthrop Investigates, Pie in the Sky. Pie in the Sky, of course, with Uncle Monty. Clocking Doc Off, Midsummer Murders, Where the Heart Is, all of the, basically every show. New Tricks, every show with old people in, he's been in.
But we love Keith Barron, don't we?
He was in Corrie for a little bit.
Was he?
Yeah, I remember him being in that, but I can't really remember. Like, I'm sure he was like a scammer that came in to woo somebody, but he was trying to rip them off or something like
Probably
Gail, yes. But he's a bit old for Gail, so maybe Audrey. So yeah, Keith Barron is one of those that we've always talked about, but genuinely... don't really know that much about him. It's only all because of that one line on Vic and Bob.
It is. That it's all because of Vic and Bob, isn't it? That is why we talk about him. I mean, Gwen Taylor as well. She seemed to have been in loads of sitcoms and stuff, didn't she?
She's certainly been in Doctors. She's been had a lot. I think she's in EastEnders at the minute with her for the last couple of years. She's a regular in EastEnders. Holby City, of course. She's also been in Corrie for a couple of years, about 10 years ago. But again, like these people have been in loads of stuff. But
she looks she should have been in Bread, but I don't think she was.
But I know she's in a show called Barbara where she's the star. Barbara, can you remember that?
Is it a detective thing or something?
No, it's a comedy. It's ITV.
Is it?
And it's the guy, you'll know who he is. He's called Sam Kelly. Do you know who I mean by that?
No.
Do you remember the Dennis Waterman vehicle On the Up?
I vaguely remember that particular vehicle.
It's his mate in that, the other driver. He's a driver.
On the Up.
Barbara was...
Does Waterman sing the theme tune of On the Up?
Yes, of course. I'm on the up. Well, that's how it goes.
Of course he does.
Of course he
fucking does.
Of course he does. Anyway, so the people who are in it have gone on to other stuff. The guy who plays Robert, who's, what was the name of the lady again?
Linda.
Linda's husband, who like is basically a figure of fun, and he's he's just like, he's in and out all the time, isn't he, in the bar. He hates foreign land. He hates foreigners and everything
he
about
does.
It.
He's a Brit, a proper Brit abroad, as you would say. Very and he doesn't, he's not very attentive to his wife.
No, he's not, he? Which allows, of course, the extremely keen Keith Barron to move in.
I mean, it's almost instant, isn't it, as he gets there. I think that they try to check in and there's an incredibly rude Spanish clerk
is
at
he
the
rude?
Desk, isn't there? Yeah, he's terribly rude, yes. And Keith Barron gets there and he's talking about, I wish we had matching luggage and all this kind of thing. So he's trying to portray that he's been on many a holiday before.
Yeah, so he's got a real imposter syndrome, hasn't he? He's one of those British men comedy characters that are from this era that is like the small man syndrome kind of thing. He's always wants to be better than he is. And
he has ideas above his station,
and he thinks it's everybody else's fault but his. That's about it, isn't it? And there's character like
pretty
that
much.
In pretty much every sitcom from this era, I would say. Derek Trotter, I would say, is one of those. It's probably the
Definitely.
Most famous one, but done a lot better than this, I think. Yeah, so, you know, from him downwards, this is the type of character he is. So they get on holiday. It starts with them getting into the hotel. The sets, by the way, very poor. Very poor.
the sets are in Leeds, and throughout the 2 years, I don't think they leave that hotel.
There's about
They're
three
always
rooms.
In the hotel. There's like the bar, a room.
The restaurant,
that's
the
it.
Lobby. There's a fountain outside, which is the scene of two dunkings in the first episode.
Two dunkings. Not two dunkings. But, I mean, like I say, he just gets there straight away, doesn't he? And he meets Linda, the exotic Linda, who's coming down the stairs, isn't he? Or Caesar. And he says, well, she's French. I can tell. Yeah. I can tell that she's French. But, of course, she's not. She's British. So they plan to meet up, don't they? And he's instantly smitten by her.
Well, he's got there's a really loose idea that they'll meet up as couples. But I mean, it's not that's not his idea, is it? And really. And his wife doesn't have a say in it. And I would imagine his wife, bless her, Amy, she's a little bit more, but she's less exotic, let's say.
I mean, do you say bless her? But I mean, why doesn't she just give him a right good slap? Do you know what I mean? Why is she putting up with this scandalous thing?
Because he comes out with a sob story halfway through, doesn't he?
That's one of the things that I didn't think would be in this sitcom. He seems to be going through somewhat of a midlife crisis, doesn't he? Because he's getting redundancy.
He's putting on a brave front, isn't he? So
and that's why they've gone on this holiday.
It starts with them getting to the hotel and he's like, oh, we should have had better cases than this. People think we don't know what we're doing. And, you know, we should have at least put some stickers on to make it look like we've been other places. And he's got nothing in his passport and he pretends that the guy on the desk is like, oh, your first time abroad? And he's, no, of course not. I've been abroad so many times, my passport's full and I've just had to get a new one. And he's just got this idea that he needs to pretend that he's something he's not, which is always going to set him up for many a fall when it comes to just saying anything out loud or when anybody talks to his wife. So then he has one good line where they've checked into their room and his wife says, come on, cheer up. Like, it's not all that. Basically, his suitcase has fallen open, hasn't it? And his underpants have fell out in the lobby.
His underpants
He's crestfallen about this and he's furious with his wife, even though it's not her fault, but it symbolizes that they should have had better suitcases, which seems to be all he cares about. And she says, come on, look, it's the first night of holiday. We're out on the balcony. There's the cicadas are chirping, the honeysuckles on the breeze and all of that. And he says, all right then. And she goes back inside. And she says, oh, one thing, I forgot to pack your shoes. And he is furious about this. So one thing, he's in a full suit, as is everybody in this hotel.
That was the other thing. I mean, why go on holiday in a full suit?
A full suit, including shoes. And I'm thinking, shoes, like how many pairs of actual shoes does somebody need when they're in Benidorm, wherever it is that they're at? Like, surely he doesn't need any more pairs of like office shoes that he's wearing, the dress shoes.
Yeah.
But he has one good line. He says, well, what will people say if they see us with holes in me? This one's got a hole in. And she's like, oh, don't worry about that. They'll be on the floor, won't they? And he says, well, what will people say if they see us? They'll think I've walked here. And I thought that was a pretty good line. I like that.
That was a pretty good line.
I actually laughed out loud at that one.
But it is also the writer, to an effect, kind of speaking down to working class people. I mean, there was a time in the 80s where these holidays were certainly more affordable for families and stuff like that. And they could go away. They're definitely not going away with holes in their shoes.
No, I get that. And I agree with you. I think there's a bit of both, right? It would be that people going abroad for the first time would have had that, well, does nobody speak English here? Or is English going to have to stick together?
They would have had that kind of, you know, oh, I'm in a different place and stuff like that. Or, you know, I want to prove to people that this is comfortable for me and I have been abroad before and all that kind of stuff. But they certainly wouldn't have gone away with holes in their shoes.
No, I doubt it. I agree with you. There's some bits like that are a little bit patronizing. Well, it is quite patronizing, but probably relatable to people that were watching, which I suppose is why it was popular.
It's just funny. It's a funny joke, isn't it? It's Keith Barron's best joke in the whole.
Yeah, because then he just turns
25 minutes.
He goes immediately from that. He goes down for dinner on his own, picks up Linda.
He hears the music. He hears the flamenco music or whatever, doesn't he? And that attracts him to the bar where he sees. Mm-hmm. He meets Linda again.
Well, it's the restaurant, isn't it? Because her husband's in the bar and that's why he's never there. And she's talking to him about where he's been and they've been to the Amalfi Coast and stuff like that. But she's painting the picture of, but actually I'm always on my own. Doesn't matter where we go, he moans about it and he's always in the bar moaning about being away. So she's very flirtatious for somebody who knows the other fella's married. And also, I mean, he's not a sexy man, really, is he? Like, he's literally the first person she's seen. And she's like, I'm going to get my claws into him. And I'm going to, like, be a bit disparaging about his plain wife.
Do you think it's because he's English? And a big point's made, especially by the husband, Robert, I think, that the hotel's full of Germans. And that's where his comedy sort of comes from, there's too many crowds.
He didn't really say the word Germans that much, does he?
No, he does say krauts.
Krauts. The quiz actually there is all of the racist terms, sort of the nationalities that he uses in the entire series.
Jesus.
He gets one in for the Spaniards as well, doesn't he, quite quickly?
The Italians, I think. I'm not sure. Italian?
Okay.
Maybe. No, I'm not too sure.
I'm not actually au fait with them, and I didn't do that quiz. So,
you know, I wouldn't know, Cliff. I wouldn't know these things. So I'm going to be terrible at the quiz, aren't I? I mean, how would I know that?
And then, like, the rest of the episode is basically them two sneaking off to try and have a bit of time together while her husband comes in and it's like kind of his first reaction is, what's going on here? But then it's just like, there's Germans, bloody Germans everywhere.
Yeah, he doesn't care, does he? It's a very odd situation because the husband doesn't care. The wife does care, but she does absolutely nothing about it, does she? She doesn't do anything. I mean, what are you playing at? We've just got here and you've immediately attached yourself
woman. He has his breakdown, right? And they go back to the room and he says, bloody hell.
But it's not a massive breakdown. The only instance of that is by what he says, by saying, I've been made redundant or whatever. Yeah. I mean, his underpants flying out of his suitcase is caused from then to attach himself.
I know that. she says while the four of them around the dinner table, he says something about a holiday and he says, I don't think we can afford that. And the wife says, we can't even afford this one. And then he's a bit like, whoa, you shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
And you get a little glimpse that there's something going on in the background that like a bit more than the silly slapstick and groping bottoms and stuff like that that's gone on so far. And then he gets back to the hotel room and he says, well, you know, I've been made redundant. I'm worthless. I've worked all my life. I was meant to be a solid job. I took a shit pay. No ambition because it was meant to last forever so I could pay for the kids to go abroad. They've been here, there and everywhere. I've never been anywhere. When we were landing and I saw this place for the first time, it brought tears to my eyes thinking of all the stuff I've missed out on.
Yeah, and then she's like, sob story to his wife,
and she's like, oh, well, you know, I didn't know you felt like that because obviously you've never ever said that before. And he says, so of course I see an attractive lady.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get a bit of excitement in my life. I'm thinking
the only adventure that I've got in my life is talking to an attractive lady, he says.
I'm an attractive lady.
Well, but I know you.
He said, but I already know you.
At that point, she should have just gone, right, well, I'm going home.
I was thinking, like, if that had happened to me or you in our relationships, and you've gone, you know what, I've been out of order, but fuck hell, all of this stuff's been piling up. And Lisa or Jane goes, you know, I didn't really realize that, so okay, well, I'll let you off. And then you go, but did you see the tits on that last downstairs? It's not going to fly, is it?
It really is not. I mean, and it does sort of obviously lead to all the rest of the comedy in this episode, like, you know, Amy chucking her in the water and stuff like that and getting back to her in snidey ways. But she never kind of just says to her, what the fuck you
think? Well, she takes it out on the woman, right?
Yeah, she doesn't take it out on Baron, does she? Baron's scot-free. But the thing is, though, this goes on for like two, three series. And the whole thing is the same thing about Keith Baron trying to get off with this wife.
The boosty.
Well, his actual wife is like scuppering it in some random way. I don't think he actually gets to do it.
Well, frustrating existence.
and that kind of falls into the sort of Twilight Zone world that he's living in. Or this episode, or this whole series, or what this whole program is. Whereas they're kind of trapped in this hotel, and he's trying to get off with this woman. His wife's not really doing anything to stop it, and she's not sort of saying to him, what are you playing at? This is disgraceful. And this kind of goes on for years. That it's just trapped in this kind of loop.
Couple. It doesn't like move on to different women.
Nah, it's just Linda, isn't it? He's just trying to get into Linda. And it just doesn't seem to come off for him. I watched an interview with him because they brought it back years later for some stage show or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And people would shout at him in the street, oh, did you get your leg over and stuff like that? And he was like, no, because the series would be over if that happened.
Well, yeah.
But if it did happen, it could then move on to something else, couldn't it? But it's another part. Yeah, the story could move on. But the story's just stuck in a loop because that is all it is, isn't it? It's him trying to get off with this wife. Yeah, while, you know, he's on holiday for 2 years.
Right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in 10 minutes.
You know, stick to what you're good at.
God save the
I think there's like a proper like Elvis back to duty free.
Yes.
What there were some funny lines from Amy, but I can't remember them now. But I do remember all of the racism.
Because it's one, if anybody's been on an inclusive holiday that you'd probably be able to relate to, I think she says at one point, I've never fought so much for me food in all my life.
Yeah.
So I like that one.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good.
But there's a bit, there's one line where I think it's Linda, who I presume is, she pretends to be like a scaredy cat and in need of help, damsel in distress, isn't she? I don't think she is really. Yeah. And she says, oh, what was that? There was a small dark thing scuttling around back there. And Amy says, was it that wine waiter from last night?
Yeah.
uncalled.
I mean, there's a bit of the old 80s racism in there, isn't there?
Well, it's xenophobia, isn't it? And there's all of those jokes about Germans getting in the way and getting to the pool and, you know, like queuing for the food and all of that stuff is all in there. Spanish.
The sun people, loungers.
Yeah, Spanish being unhelpful.
I mean,
lazy.
As a kid, I remember that being like, no one would play the Germans in that, in the World Cup or qualifier. Yeah. In the front of the sun, there'd always be the sun loungers, wouldn't there?
But you say, like, they're notorious kids, for that. I'm pretty sure it's only in like the last, let's say the last 10 years where that isn't a common thing. That was, I think it's kept going for much longer than like the end.
I just remember it as a kid when we played them in 1990. I remember the Sun newspaper, because that's what my dad used to get. And I remember that being on the cover of, you know, the newspaper, the Sun loungers and all
they
that kind of stuff.
They probably did that more than once, I would
imagine. But that's the thing. I mean, if it was in the tabloid press, that type of, you know, the way that people would speak about people, you know, who were foreign. And that carried on throughout the 90s and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's going to be in sitcoms and things like that, isn't it?
Of course, absolutely. It's not like this is the only sitcom or the only people who ever made those jokes. Like, it's in this because it's something that people,
well, the fan at the time found funny, obviously, didn't they?
Yeah, so there's a fair few of those kind of wisecracks in there, which watching now stand out a bit. And if, especially when it starts and they've just got to the hotel, it's like that's the majority of what's going on in it. Until the characters start getting involved. I thought it was good, despite that stuff. I thought
you know what?
Was good.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I mean, the bit that I didn't know was in there was the whole midlife crisis thing, and that quite surprised us a little bit. You know, I thought that was a good way of sort of saying that he's going to attach himself to this other woman, but how Amy sort of didn't stick up for herself or whatever was troubling, I think. Or even it's almost in a joking way that she knows that it's happening, but she's willing to keep the pretense going or whatever. It's a very odd.
So the first episode is she tells Linda that he's got arthritis and he's only able to move around freely now because they're in the sun and it's eased off. But you know, if you think when you get back to England with him, because obviously she seems to accept that it's going to happen, like he won't be able to move, he has to use a stick and all of that stuff. And
yeah,
like, so you're right, like she's kind of being like,
it's almost like it's a bit of a joke, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not an actual marriage on the line here. He's not like, he doesn't want to actually go and shag this other lass, which he does blatantly. Uh-huh. It's almost like, it's just a bit of fun.
Have you read
boys will be boys type thing?
Have you read the episode synopses for the next, like for the rest of the series?
Did I write it? If I didn't write it, I didn't read it.
Okay, so episode 3 called The Praying Mantis.
Ooh.
Amy is scornful of Linda's yoga exercises and David's attempts to impress her by keeping fit, which land him in bed with a bad back. Anxious to prove to Linda that he is unharmed and healthy, he again incurs the wrath of Amy, who throws half of his only pair of shoes over the balcony so he can't go out and meet her.
Half of his only pair of shoes.
So one shoe.
Yes. I just like that. Half of his only pair of shoes. I like that. That's good.
The fourth episode ends up with some trouble in a German inn. I would quite like to see that.
Right. Well, what I did do, Cliff, is I did, because there was a Christmas special which was supposed to be the end of the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
So I did fast forward to right at the end of the Christmas special, the last ever episode, just to see if he did get his wicked way with Linda.
Yeah.
But obviously that didn't happen. His wife is there doing the conga or something like that, where he doesn't realize she's there. So it just never happens. And again, it's like it's that kind of weird Twilight Zone.
They seem to think that they are having an affair, but they keep getting the chance to kiss, but then it gets broken up by either.
Yeah, they definitely kiss in a lift, but they don't actually. They're going up to a hotel room.
So this
to do the last, deed.
The last episode in the first series, called Hasta la Vista, of course. The fair is now out in the open, and David and Linda plan to run off together. Robert wants to fight David. Which is funny in itself. But Amy uses subtler means, filling her husband's suitcase with hotel property so that he's arrested. And then she persuades Linda she had lucky escaped, as he's a notorious kleptomaniac known as the Weasel.
I mean, obviously the whole premise of it is to set up ridiculous situations, isn't it? Like Amy's setting all these crazy situations up.
So the two but series is
in
just,
reality,
is one
should
holiday.
Just go, what the fuck? Fuck off. I mean, it's been 3 years, 2 years you've been doing this. I've had enough. You know what I mean?
It's so well, it's quite good, this, because it seems like it's just set. Two series set over 14 days, like a 2 weeks holiday. Each episode is
That's
the
impossible.
Next. each episode is the next day of the holiday. Like it's quite good. I like that. That's how it's set up. And obviously they're there for 2 weeks, and at the end, like what's going to happen? The third series. I'm not going to go into that. Anyway, I thought it was pretty good.
I enjoyed it.
Made me pine for simpler days.
It certainly did. I mean, I put it on and the wife came in or whatever, and she was like, oh, everybody used to watch this. And I think that's, you know, true of it. Everybody of that time.
Do you want a quiz?
It is. Well, it depends, really. Is it about what you said it was?
No, it's about 80 sitcoms.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
And I think by doing this quiz, I've found something else we need to watch. Which is the last question. So I don't think you'll know the answer to that, but I think it will set us up for something else. So,
go on then, I'll give it a shot.
British sitcoms of the 80s. I'm going to describe, I'm going to give you a very small synopsis and you can tell me what you think it is.
Okay.
It stars Warren Mitchell as a cantankerous old man and Una Stubbs as his wife, suffering his offensive opinions.
Is that what's it? The West Ham supporter, or whatever he was.
Garnett.
What was it called?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. You can't trick me that easily. It's called In Sickness and in Health.
Yes, that's it. In Sickness and in Health, and another infamously racist one, that isn't it?
Yes, but I think, like, he's Jewish, right, Warren Mitchell? So I think it's meant to be, like, it's just acting like, obviously it's not nice what he says.
Yeah.
Anyway, this one...
I mean, that is really racist, I think, from recollection.
Set in a British holiday camp starring Paul Shane and Sue Pollard, amongst others.
What? Why isn't this the last question?
Do you want to do this?
What? Yeah, of course. I used to quite fancy Sue Pollard. Did you?
Who's the other one? The Welsh one.
She was all right, wasn't she? Is it Heidi Highcliffe?
It is Heidi Highcliffe. I think this one was my favourite of the 80s sitcoms when we were kids growing up.
Right.
I used to love this show. It stars Carl Howman as Jackal, a wisecracking painter and decorator out on his jobs and that.
Is it Brushstrokes?
It is Brushstrokes, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to do that one as well, because that one's class, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I love Brushstrokes. And it's a clever name.
The guy behind the bar as well, he was good, wasn't he?
Did he have a tall, skinny friend, or was that a different
There was somebody else that worked with him, I think, anyway.
He was quite good, him, wasn't he?
Carl Howell. Out
of Brushstrokes. Aye.
Yeah.
I used to quite like him.
Then he was show with our favourite Liza Tarbuck, wasn't he? Liza Tarbuck.
Liza Tarbuck. The thing about him, right, he was an aspirational character as a kid. Was he to you?
It was pretty, yeah.
He's a painter and decorator.
I think it would be
pretty
good.
But he's still Yeah, he was
go
still
to all
like
people's houses and go to the pub.
Yeah, he was quite an aspirational character for me as a kid. In
right,
brushstrokes.
Next one. Two sisters.
Him and Mr. T.
Of course, the two main heroes from
the main aspirations. Uh-huh.
Two sisters with wildly different personalities are forced to live together when their husbands are jailed for something or other.
Well, we haven't mentioned this in a while, did we? At the start of this podcast, it was on every week, wasn't it? That's all we're talking about.
It was, yeah.
Is it the boards of a feather?
It is, of course, starring Pauline Squirks.
Pauline Squirk. We still haven't watched that either, have we, Pauline Squirk?
I've watched enough of it. It's fucking woeful, but yeah. Okay, this is the last one. This stars Robin Asquith as as you guessed it, a Randy Milkman.
What? And this was allowed. This was a sitcom.
1984 TV sitcom.
It's not one of his films.
No.
It's not TV. Confessions of.
It is not. I'd never heard of it before.
I don't know this.
Obviously, I want to see this show now.
Yeah, but Robin Asquith also got himself involved in the old 70s, late 70s horrors and that, you know. He's
really?
In a few.
He was in Coronation Street recently, like about, I don't know, within the last 10 years. Came back and he was like a basically a Mick Jagger style rocker, like in his 70s, wearing leathers and stuff like that.
He's still got the blonde hair.
He was absolutely class. He's got a book that I really want. He's quite good to follow on Twitter as well, or X as it's called now. So Bottle Boys, British sitcom, ran for two series, 1984 to 85, starring Robin Asquith as a football mad milkman, Dave Deacon. The series mined broad comedy from Randy Dave's amorous adventures.
Randy Dave. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've known a few Randy Daves. So what's it called? Bottle Boys.
Bottle Boys, yeah.
Right. Randy.
It was
Bolton.
Originally written, the part was originally written for Jim Davison.
Well, they're basically the same person, aren't they?
It has a reputation as one of the worst British sitcoms ever produced. And Mark Lewison, the Beatles scholar, wrote in the Radio Times Guide to Comedy that ITV sitcoms had often plumbed the depths, but this was the limit. It was repeatedly...
It's plumbed the depths, but this is the limit of the depths.
Yep.
This... That doesn't make any sense, is it, from
despised, Mr. Lewison? Despised by comedy executives at ITV. He described it as the worst ever British sitcom.
And that's what we're going to do, was it?
I think
doing
we
that next
do it.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's your pick next, I think. So,
it's
it was my
I'll
pick, next,
this,
isn't
it?
It's you. So, it's written by the guy who did Love Thy Neighbour, which is another of the racism ones.
Yes. Another
and
one.
Mind Your Language, which I think is also the same.
Yeah.
A guy who taught a group of foreigners is what that's about. A guy who taught a group of foreigners.
yes, I have seen clips of that one. I think not that
so,
I remember.
Yeah. Well, let's see if we can find Bottle Boys because I mean,
let's definitely
want to see it.
Yeah,
things that go.
I agree.
Oh yes, the names of the episodes are worth it alone.
Come on, then give us a few.
Well, there's Danger Women at Work.
Danger exclamation mark.
No, it just says Danger Women at Work, which maybe they're just dangerous women. One's called Things That Go Bump in the Night, which I would imagine is a particularly amorous one. And the last episode is called The Milk Cup Runneth Over.
Nice.
Right, yes, so that's that. Anyway, what are we going to do next? Music.
Music, yes, we've got music. We've got music this week from the Rampants, who are from Kilmarnock.
Yep,
from
nice.
Killy. Yes, and this song's called Blasted, and it was out on Friday, I think. It's the third single that they've released, so give this one a listen.
Yes, nice one. It's a big banger, isn't it? Very punky. I like
big
it.
Big banger. Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, let's get it on and we will speak to you next time should you return, and I'll see you soon, Brett.
I shall return.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. 1, 2, 3, 4. You bastard. You couldn't have it. You want to walk so far and go into the sun when you're spinning outside like a fire of a gun. You want that. You couldn't have that. You tell me your stories of the dapper comes like even when I tried it all and I gave it all my mate. But I couldn't have that. But I couldn't have that. And then I couldn't see. Some may go and others stay away. Some say a mile, others say kilometre. And I run so fast when I'm playing my guitar. Even when I go for a laugh, laugh, cry. Even when I say, then I run, then I die. Then I'm gonna go fly high in the sky. Fly high, pop, then you'll die. But I couldn't have that. You know I couldn't have that. They say they couldn't get a lot of me. Even when I walk in, then they couldn't make for me. Even when you go and laugh, then I cry. Even when you said sing and then you die. Even when you know you couldn't get a lot of me. Even when you're gonna couldn't get a fight of me. Even when you said you couldn't ever make for me. Even when you said you couldn't ever me. Like I laugh, 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 and I cry, cry, cry. Laugh, laugh.